From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is away this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week began with Justice Department prosecutors recommending a sentence of 7 to 9 years for Roger Stone. In November of 2019, President Trump's longtime friend and former campaign advisor was convicted of lying to Congress and tampering with a witness during the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. But on Monday night at 1:48 a.m.
Overnight came the tweet from President Trump. This is a horrible and very unfair situation. The real crimes were on the other side, as nothing happens to them cannot allow this miscarriage of justice.
And on Tuesday morning,
an official with the department tells the AP that the request of 7 to 9 years was excessive.
The Attorney General's spokeswoman says the decision to change the sentencing guidelines came before the Trump tweet, and there was no communication between DOJ and the White House when it comes to sentencing guidelines.
Upon hearing the news, all four prosecutors leading the case withdrew from the legal proceedings, bringing into question the integrity of the Attorney General.
President Trump is testing the independence of the Justice Department, thanking his own attorney general for taking charge of the case.
And I didn't speak to him, by the way, just so you understand. They saw the horribleness of a 9-year sentence for doing nothing. You have murderers and drug addicts, they don't get 9 years.
Well, that's not true. But on Thursday, after a flurry of negative headlines and backlash from Democrats, Barr told ABC's Pierre Thomas this.
I had made a decision that I thought was fair and reasonable in this particular case. And once the tweet occurred, the question is, well, now what do I do? And do you go forward with what you think is the right decision, or do you pull back because of the tweet? And that just sort of illustrates how disruptive these tweets can be.
Early reports from CNN indicated that Trump wasn't upset by Barr's remark. His admonishment was a win-win for the White House. In the midst of widespread concern about prosecutorial independence, it positions one of the president's most loyal factotums as nominally independent. On Friday, Barr announced he was hiring outside prosecutors to broadly review other controversial political cases, including the one against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. So, this Stone stuff could be seen as trampling on the already toppled norm of an independent Justice Department, as Slate's Dahlia Lithwick notes. Dahlia, welcome back to OTM.
Thank you for having me, Brooke.
Okay, so former Attorney General Eric Holder said this week that the sequence of events was unprecedented. But on Thursday morning, on Morning Edition, I heard George Terwilliger, who had served as Deputy Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, succeeding, incidentally, William Barr. He said it's not inappropriate for an attorney general to weigh in on sentencing and such, and that, in fact, not even all the career lawyers at Justice agreed with the severity of the sentence proposed for Roger Stone. So why all the fuss?
I just don't think the question, Brooke, is whether there is sometimes dissension within the Justice Department. Of course, there is always dissension. It is an institution like any other. I think the question is, how is it possible that the attorneys found out on Fox News that their sentencing recommendation is being withdrawn and a different sentencing recommendation from their political superiors is being issued in its place? That kind of thing really doesn't happen. If it looks like Bill Barr took instructions from Donald Trump to go more lightly on a Donald Trump colleague and friend, that's shocking.
How does the Barr intervention change the equation for the press? How should reporters on the legal beat adjust their approach?
The through line for me goes back to Merrick Garland in some ways, because if you remember when Mitch McConnell vowed and Chuck Grassley vowed that Merrick Garland was going to get no hearing and no vote, the legal press was left with their pants around their ankles, like sitting there saying, like, but wait, Constitution, you know, this can't be right. And what we learned was this was not a law. It was not a rule. It was a norm that for hundreds of years has provided if the president nominates somebody in the last year of his presidency, that person gets at minimum a hearing and a vote. And when that didn't happen, I think the legal press just didn't quite know how to explain that no law had been broken. It was just a cardinal norm of how governance has been done had been shattered. And I say that only because I think that is what's happening again. There is a longstanding norm that says that there is a very, very strict line of separation between what happens in the White House and what happens at the Justice Department.
So is this the fundamental conundrum then for reporters? I mean, any person who reads the paper will think, okay, a norm is a norm. The law is what matters. But actually, in the running of the government, sometimes norms are more important than laws.
The truest lesson of impeachment was just that, that there is a longstanding norm that says you don't go around asking foreign countries who very much are reliant on your millions of dollars of foreign aid to possibly intervene and get oppo research against your electoral opponent.
That was kind of explicit, though.
Well,
I mean, that was one of the few things that the founders kind of said, personal gain, bribing foreign governments, you know, that kind of thing.
And yet, we had an awful lot of the Republicans in the Senate, and certainly some of Donald Trump's lawyers saying, if no explicit law was broken, then there can be no impeachment.
Right.
And you see that with Donald Trump not turning over his tax returns, simply a norm, self-dealing so that the Secret Service is paying, you know, millions of dollars to his businesses, just a norm. To me, it just shows how reliant we've been on these soft norms or even very hard norms. And now we're learning they're just awfully flimsy.
After this president was elected, we spoke to Masha Gessen, who was then writing for the New York Review of Books. Now she's at the New Yorker. And we asked her about her experience of Putin, about whom she's written literally volumes. In the midst of all this talk of a looming American autocracy, we asked her, what lessons should we take from Russia? And I was skeptical at the time of one of those lessons. She said, your institutions will not save you.
I was struck by the exact same line. It was scary, but I also just thought, our Justice Department is a monster. It is a machine helmed by people who have devoted their life to text and law and rules and right and wrong. And even if we don't agree on details about how policies are implemented, we agree on what justice is. And so I remember thinking, you know, the generals will save us and the Justice Department will save us. I guess I'm a little surprised at the extent, Brooke, to which the Foreign Service has stepped in. We've seen silent lawyers say, I'm out, I can't do this anymore. But it hasn't been this public explanatory proposition the way we've seen from the Foreign Service. And I wonder a
little— Because no hearings.
Well, because no hearings, and I also think the culture of the Justice Department is such a small-c conservative culture of a deep, deep abiding belief that the president may change, but the Justice Department doesn't. I wonder if some of it is just people who genuinely believe from the bottom of their hearts that if they stay on, they could mitigate the worst of it.
What about the official statements that come from institutions like the Justice Department? I have never seen an administration so steeped in lies. We get a lot of information from government institutions, departments. Can we trust them at all anymore?
I've been doing this long enough to remember covering the Justice Department during the era of the torture memos and Guantanamo. Mm-hmm. And even then, we could disagree on the merits of, you know, the CIA torture program. But the claims that black is white and up is down and right is wrong and deep state have really, really changed everything. Once you are in a situation where you assume that the Justice Department is going to tell you something that is not true about how this Roger Stone sentencing kerfuffle happened, you're in really, really pernicious territory, not just as a journalist, but as a citizen. The thing that scares me almost more than anything is that I think we're starting to see a narrative that is being paved with President Trump's threats to the sentencing judge in this case, Amy Berman Jackson, claims about the prosecutors who walked off the case and how they're all steeped in corruption. I worry that we are really starting to see in real time complete collapse of the norm that the people at the Justice Department are, by and large, trying to do good bipartisan work.
It's Trump's rhetorical trick, Crooked Hillary and so forth, creating a kind of quick synaptic pathway between a phrase and a person or an institution. The phrase fake news, which has migrated so enormously from its original meaning as news cranked out at offshore clickbait sites, to any report that Trump doesn't like, has now taken root. And then you mentioned this deep state trope. That was in a New York Times headline not long ago.
That's what I mean when I say we're normalizing it. If you just keep reinforcing the language that there is such a thing as a quote-unquote deep state, this is a fantasy. There is no deep state. At the end of the day, what it serves to do is completely dilute public confidence in the Justice Department. People stop trusting the Justice Department to be truthful. So it goes way beyond Roger Stone and his sentence. It's the same with the news stuff. We see public confidence in the news plummet. And this is the other hallmark of authoritarianism. It's not just breaking the institution. It's breaking public confidence in the institution. And that is a move that, when it's directed at the entire justice system, really goes to the heart of what rule of law means. If you cannot trust that the bad guys go to jail and the good guys are exonerated, then I don't know what we're all doing here.
Dahlia, thanks very much.
Thank you, Brooke. Thanks for having me.
Dahlia Lithwick writes about the courts and the law for Slate and hosts the podcast Amicus. Coming up, how the notion of prosecutorial independence evolved, and how hard it may be to recover once lost. This is On the Media.